yet as quickly as possible. The quickest way to get anything with communication is to literally be able to see the wave that you're pushing out, to go above and beyond the words in communication. Because you don't get the words to count until the waveforms that go out of your mouth match it. So if you're talking about excitement, being really thrilled, and, you know, how wonderful life could really be if you were to make certain changes. I saw this guy on TV last night. He came out and said, you can really do things which will make your life wonderful and really truly exciting. And I went, because the message that he was delivering did not have a wallop. It did not have power. It did not have congruency. And I know people who have heard the word congruency, they think congruency is being an idiot. Congruency is where you are at all moments in time, looking like a personal power doll. It's where you wear your hair a certain way, which looks like if you were to dunk you in a swimming pool, it wouldn't change anything on it. Right? If they were to turn you upside down, it wouldn't affect the smile on your face. If they were to bang you against the wall, you would get up and talk about how good the carpet is. It's the same look those Christian fuckers have on their face when they show up at your door. And you look at them and go, I'm a Jew. And they go, I feel sorry for you. You killed Jesus. And I go, I thought Jesus was a Jew. He was a rabbi, wasn't he? You know, I thought it was the Romans killed somebody. And they said, no, you did it. You Jews killed Jesus. And I thought, what a selling technique is this? Not only that, they tell me I can go to a place with a whole bunch of assholes like them. No, thank you. I want to go where somebody's going to be nice. And they're not nice. They're... What I want you to realize is congruency is where you think about what you want to create in them. That when I want people to go into a relaxed state, I need to change the sound of my voice so that it creates a state which resonates that way. That comes from here. If I try to go relax, it just doesn't work. Being able to shift your communication requires you shift your entire body, because the waveform is not made in your lips, contrary to popular belief. When you stand behind a podium, take on your most successful look and say, everybody can be successful. It doesn't sound successful. You see, you need to get people to be motivated in just the right way. People are motivated when they anticipate. It's not anticipate, it's anticipate. And they're real different. They feel different. It is, even in the most visual of humans on the face of the earth, the feeling that you create inside them. That's the foundation of the words that you use that get in the ear and get processed through an unconscious language mechanism. Yes, you can draw pictures for visuals. That just keeps their mind out of the way. While you convey meaning, because meaning is processed at the unconscious level. What each of you will learn is what people take with you in terms of information and their ability to access it, even numbers on a contract, is based on the foundation of the feeling they have about it. And you don't want them to feel as if they understand, but to feel as if they are understanding that it's a process, that they can look at their contract and know how to find things on it. That if you're selling something to somebody and you sell it to them and afterwards they feel confused, you may end up with buyer's remorse. There are lots of places. The sale is final and they end up with regret, you certainly aren't going to be in the position to prospect from them. My policy is, when I sell people things, they're obligated to send me new people. I install in them the post-hypnotic suggestion to do so. My idea of prospecting is doing good work and installing in them the compulsion to make sure that others come my way. You can't leave it to chance. You can leave nothing to chance. When you're out there stocking excellence, you have to stock it in everyone at all times. I make everybody that's my groups the best that I can make them be, so that when they come back, people are going to go, what happened to you? Any of you ever had that experience? You got back to your life and people went, what the fuck happened to you? You said, it doesn't matter, just sit down, relax. Let me tell you about it. Just sit for a spell. And by the way, by and by now, phrases I love, by for now, why fool around? That as you begin to realize that each word you use has impact if you give it the time and the chance. See, as a musician, one of the things I hate is there's a phenomenon with young musicians and sometimes compulsively with older ones, where they act as if the policy is so many notes, so little time. It's like, it's the more, yeah, it's the, some of you, well, you know, that's the impact of youth and benzodrine. And nowadays, other things. To me, it amazes me because most people, when they speak in front of an audience, they get wound up and they start speaking higher and higher and higher, faster, 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 and that's not how you impact on people. I hear it, especially in commercials. Good God. I mean, I heard a commercial last night, which could have gotten just about anybody to never go into that store. They said, now we want everybody, as you come down to our store, we know you're, no. Whatever. We know you buy. No, you buy. Problem with speaking too fast is you say stupid things. Better you say one word and get the full impact out of it. When most people say relax, they go, now, just relax. Instead of relax. And wait. And watch. With audiences, you sometimes speak fast because you want to convey information. Once you have the state of consciousness that you want. See, you have to trust that the unconscious is the one that's going to retrieve the information. So if it's packaged properly, there'll be no problem. I don't need for people to go out and talk a lot about it. What I need for people to do is when I teach them things like how to work with clients, how to sell a car, it's when the person walks onto the lot, I want them to look at that person and go into a whole other state. And when they're done, to go out of it. That's the most important thing. Right? So they won't become blurry in their work. They'll look at it when that person steps on the car lot. I want them to hear a lion roar inside them go. Look around at the client, throw thunderbolts so that the client is captivated, not so that the client feels like they're being pushed, because I don't want them to walk. I want them to just look and give away the message, come away closer. Come away closer. Come to me. And when the person goes up, and then instead of saying, can I help you?
Probably not. You're that stupid.
Were you looking for something? No, they just popped onto the car lot. You know? What's this shit about? Always start all conversations with the stupidest thing you can think of. Look at them right in the eye and say, I know why you're here. Do you believe in fate? But before I show you anything, let's sit down. You know what my job is? My job is to make sure, out of all the decisions you could make, that you make the right one. So let's sit down. There have been times and places in your life where you looked at something and you knew it was perfect, and you were right. There are times where you thought you wanted something and then afterwards, it wasn't right. They're not the same. If you pick the right thing here, you'll send me customers for life and you'll come back. And I will not settle for less. If you want to make a mistake, go somewhere else. You wait, people go, I don't want to make a mistake. I mean, who would say, oh yeah, I'm so used to making mistakes, I couldn't do it any other way. It doesn't happen. They'll tell you exactly where the location. As you speak to them, you can watch them. Their eyes will move to where the right decision is and where the wrong one is. And then you can say, now, what did you think would be the best thing for you? You'll have people with a family of four that want a two-seater sports car. And when they speak, you look over and go, you want to be happy, don't you? You want to know you've done the right thing. show you something that's practical, sporty, something that every time you look at, you'll know you made the right decision and you'll feel good. You do want to feel good about this for years and years, starting today for the rest of your life. That's why I sold so many cars. I'm the only guy who could sell big Cadillacs in the middle of the gas crisis because I knew there was something more important than the price of gas. You know, people left that working at the Mercedes lot. They sold Mercedes, and they also had the Cadillac dealership. They quit and went and worked at Datsun places. It frustrated the shit out of them because people would go, oh, it's such a gas guzzler. I'd look at them, yeah, and I'd go, but you could go out and buy another small car that's a child killer. Do you have any children? But you like to see their arms and legs and their heads split open and know that it was that way because you were saving money on gas. There's nothing like the truth to sell things. I found at the time those cars unsafe and immoral. I still do. Now they build Japanese cars up to certain safety standards. There were a lot of people who were killed in those cars to save money on gas. That's not a good decision, is it? I don't think so. I told him, I said, if you can't afford Mercedes, then I'll sell you a used Cadillac for $2,000. You'll have $10,000 left over to make repairs and buy gas. And your children will be safe. And you'll have big leather seats and a 40-gallon tank. Right? Electric windows. And you can screw in the back seat with your legs stretched out. Now go ahead, walk across the street. There was a Toyota lot across the street. Now go ahead, walk across the street. When you walk across the street and you look at those little cars, I want you to just walk up and hit it like that with your hand. It's not on the top. Don't kick the tire. Hit it. Just right where the brace is between the window. Right? And I want you to go in and have the luxury of rolling the windows down by hand. Feel the comfort of the car. Listen to the sound of the engine. And realize, yeah, you prefer to have a new car. But, you know, if you only spend a couple $1,000s on a used Cadillac, you can come back here next year and I'll put you in a Mercedes. Because all of this is a lie and it's going away. But the safety of your family and yourself and your own comfort, that's never going away. Then I take them out and show them my car. I had my car for 20 years. I bought me a big pig. The biggest pig that was a Mercury Marauder. 429, double four barrel, stock right off the showroom. Weighed more than a Lincoln Continental and would outrun a GTO or any other black and white car. Electric windows, 8-track deck. Still has an 8-track deck in it. We still have it. I finally sold it to the guy that works for me. I actually didn't sell it to him. I gave it to him for a while. I live in San Francisco. I was getting $500 worth of parking tickets a day. It was just getting ridiculous. Because there isn't a parking space big enough to put it in anymore. It's the longest as long as a limousine. And I thought, limousine? I could sell those. The attitude you need to take is that when you look at the truth of things inside of what it is that you teach, no matter what it is you do, what it is you sell, or what it is that you convey, the power lies in the truth. When you look at the big picture of things, people don't understand because of the way they chunk information. So you can't let them understand the way they do normally. You need to be able to create inside of them a feeling that there's something greater going on. Because there is. That when people come in and they go, okay, I learned the meta model. And I go, really? And I know some of you in here were taught the meta model. Right? And you were taught that if somebody came in the door and said, I'm depressed, what were you supposed to say? About what? Wrong. Whoever taught it got it from the book, not from me. Because when people come in and say, I'm depressed, I go, whoa, that sounds like fun. Because when they look at you, they go, do this, I've already got them. You go, anchor it, hold that thought. Now, herein lies the other dimension I want to add. The other dimension is, when you do training, the more sneaky you are, you can do it subtly or you can do it boldly, You're standing inside of their mind. Remember, everybody's thinking, they're making pictures. The pictures aren't in their head, they're out in front of them. Right? Now, I want to become the voices and the pictures inside your mind in such a way that I can control with the speed of my tempo and the slowness and the surfaces that I create. Actual things that are not there, but they're as real as things that are there. I want to be able, when I look inside of somebody's mind and they get a certain idea that I see from time to time, to be able to pull it away. Whether they know it or not, it will affect them. I've gotten to the point where I can rip a picture out of somebody's head and their neck will snap. Some of you have seen me do it. I don't usually like to get that vicious, but I will from time to time. There's something stuck inside their head that's in their way, or mine. Well, what's the difference at that moment in time? They paid me to make changes in their head. They paid me to put ideas in, not to give them ideas they could distort into what they already know. Because that's what they'll do. They'll go, uh-huh. And when I see it or hear it in their heads, that means they've done it. They took a perfectly good idea, ripped all the stuff off of it, and jammed it into what they already know. Can't let them get away with it. You can tell it because they go, uh-huh. Uh-huh means you're finished. Okay, yes. No, I got it. Don't tell me anymore. It fits inside of what I already know. No. Please, no more ideas. Please, no. Dang, slap them. That's where you go, wait a minute. Just watch it go away. And say, I want you to look at this from another side. Perhaps we can open up the way we're viewing this. Remember, all of the things about this are literal. When you were going inside making pictures, when you make them bigger, they become more powerful. Right? Well, I got news for you. All this stuff's fluid. You can take ideas. You all have an idea of what it is to sell things. Right? And I tell them, I go, now let's take all of that you already know. We'll just crunch it up, put it away into a safe place. Right? It looks like a metaphor, but the pictures are gone in their head. Right? You go, we're going to open up a new window of possibility. A big window of possibility that perhaps all the people you can sell to now you don't have to worry about, but all the ones you're not selling to, it only has to do with changing the flexibility in your behavior. Why, if you could do things in a different way, so to speak, look at them from another point of view. Not the old you, but another you. A you that was capable of doing things differently. Then, when you reopened up this package when I gave it back to you, it would be twice as big, or else you wouldn't need this anymore. You could put up something new, which is the belief that you can affect anyone. And every one of you needs to build a belief that tells you you can change anybody's mind. Absolutely. You can open up new directions, new windows. You have to have more faith in every living human than they have in themselves. You have to know they're stuck in their beliefs. They're stuck in their ideas. Of course, they feel like they can't make more money. They feel like they can't be successful. They feel stupid. They went to school. How could they feel otherwise? They went to school and they were told things like, well, you have no aptitude for math. Oh, I didn't know that was genetic. You know, it's in the math gene. It's right next to the music gene where you learn to carry a tune. Get this. I was given a test at school in which it was determined I had no aptitude for things in college. Taken out of my college classes and put into machine shop where I spent a year making one bolt. Well, it was the standing in line to wait till we got up to the shop teacher so he could do the next thing to it over again. No, they wouldn't let any of us touch sharp objects. Where I went to school, that was not safe. It's okay, because while we waited in line, we did other things. We actually, this guy had so little sensory acuity, we had a crap game going in the same building. We brought people in from the outside. We didn't just between ourselves, we were running a game for people from the outside. This guy didn't even notice it. And we did it every day. Sometimes he'd look up and he'd go, who are those people? And I go, oh, there's some people from the administration building. Well, that explains the age in the suits. And this guy goes, take the next one. Take the next one. You go, then he'd look at it and you go, see, you're doing a fine job. Well, my belief was that all teachers and administrators and especially counselors were idiots. And that didn't take much sensory acuity on my part. When I looked at this one counselor who was wearing a polka-dotted dress, 40 years old, just a little overweight, not bad. And she had on a polka-dotted dress with a white background and brown dots. I can see him to this day. And she looked like she did her hair in a garbage can. She got out the garbage in the morning and did this. She looked at me and said, Richard, you're not living up to your potential.